Blog Talk Radio.
A licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro, providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. ManaPro, nurturing life. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer. My co-host is poultry advocate and author Pat Foreman. Today is Wednesday, September 1st, and I'd like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. You can follow the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show 24 hours a day at our website, chickenwhisperer.com. That's chickenwhisperer.com. From there, you can follow us on Twitter, become a fan on Facebook, visit our blog, sign up for our monthly e-newsletter, The Chicken Scratch, and get all kinds of great Chicken Whisperer gear. If you're listening live today on Blog Talk Radio, I invite you to join us in the live chicken chat room. It's going on right now. You can talk with other backyard poultry with the Chicken Whisperer fans and other chicken owners from around the country. You can also ask any questions you may have for our special guest when we have them on. All you have to do is click on the Chat Now button at our homepage there at Blog Talk Radio. Take a moment to register. That'll get you your own unique, fun, and creative screen name. Then you can come on into the live chicken chat room, sit a spell, have a great time, meet some new friends, and talk all about backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. I would also like to invite you to mark this radio show as a favorite and request to be on our friends list while you're there at Blog Talk Radio. We hope you'll take a moment to do this today. And again, I want to thank you all for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro. ManaPro is committed to providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. No matter the animal, no matter the product, you can be certain that ManaPro cares as much about the well-being of your flock as you do. So try one of the many poultry products offered at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life. McMurray Hatchery is the world's oldest and largest rare breed hatchery. They have been providing their customers quality poultry since 1917 and have more than 110 different breeds to choose from. Be sure to sign up for their weekly special email at McMurrayHatchery.com and receive a $5 internet exclusive coupon to use on your first internet order. McMurray Hatchery, the world's largest and oldest rare breed hatchery.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at GQFradio.com. That's GQFradio.com.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer.
here to tell you that if you have backyard poultry, nothing is more important than making sure your feathered friends are safe from infectious poultry diseases. Learn the simple steps to keep your birds healthy by visiting this website, healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov. That's healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov.
A message from the USDA.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It's now time to bring on my lovely, wonderful co-host, poultry advocate, Pat Foreman. Hello, Pat.
Yeah, hey, Whisper. Happy Wednesday here. You know, I've got to warn you right up front, Whisper. You know, as I was mentioning last week, I have one cup of coffee a week down at the Healthy Foods Co-op right after the farmer's market going there. So I've had my one cup of coffee, and if I sound pretty buzzed, I am. On caffeine. I want to be very clear. It's not even for caffeine, but it's amazing how being caffeine-free the rest of the week, all I have to do is have about a quarter cup, and the rest of it's cream, and I just am happy as a lark. So, hey, today's a big day. Boy, am I excited about today. As I'd mentioned when we talked earlier, I've got to sign off about 1:15 because I'm having lunch with the mayor of Lexington, Virginia. She's the first woman mayor ever, and with Chris Carpenter, who is a special project coordinator for Washington and Lee Dining Services. And what's so neat about this lunch is Chris's job is to find farmers and bring local foods into the Washington and Lee cafeterias and food systems. And, of course, Mimi is very, very much green and pro-local food, so we're going to be brainstorming some ways to enhance the local food supply. And to us, local food means the Shenandoah Valley. So this goes all up and down the Shenandoah Valley. And it even includes, I've got a wholesale account from way back when we used to have the farm, with a Browker. They're an equipment supply dealer, so we're going to try to upgrade some of the local poultry producers with wholesale prices so they can get good pluckers and just to expand their operations even more. So that's kind of my vignette for later this afternoon. And how did your interview go with the news?
It went very well, yes. Darren Kagan, she was a longtime anchor and host at CNN, and she's for the last several years, she's been kind of doing her own thing at DarrenKagan.com, and she basically does kind of feel-good, public interest, kind of warm and fuzzy stories about what's going on all across the country. And she does live here in Atlanta, and she started following me on Twitter and Facebook, and then she does have backyard poultry. She has, in fact, Pat, she has one of the beautiful coops that we've actually given away. She ordered her coop from mypetchicken.com. So she has the small coop in her backyard. She has three chickens. She has an Americana, a ISA Brown, and she has a silver-laced Wyandotte.
Nice flock.
Yeah, very beautiful home. And we got out there yesterday, and we did just a real short video shoot. I was there about 40 minutes. They didn't know exactly what they're doing and what they're looking for. And so it was it went really, really well. And she did have a question that you'll see on the video. Because of the holiday weekend coming up, that reminds me first, let me tell everybody, there will be no radio show on this coming up on Labor Day. So this Monday, of course, the 6th is Labor Day. There will be no radio show. Pat and I are going to have a little bit of a long weekend, but we will return on Tuesday, the 7th. So based on the holiday, the video should be released on her website, DarrenKagan.com, next Tuesday or Wednesday. And of course, once it's posted, we will share it on our Facebook and Twitter and our website and the whole nine yards. So yeah, that should be airing sometime next week. But her question, not to give it away, well, yes, we'll give it away.
you can give it away. There's no secrets now.
No secrets. She was asking me, she's had the hens for, I guess, about maybe approaching 2 months now, and the first week she got them, she said they laid a couple of three eggs throughout the week, and then now nothing ever since. So basically, we had a little consultation, and I explained to her that whenever you move hens from one home they've gotten used to and comfortable with to another, a lot of times that will shut down their little egg factories, if you will. And number two, we've had a very, very hot summer here in Atlanta. And so the hot temperatures, I don't know how many days we were above 90. I don't remember how many days we were above 95. So I said that can also affect it. And then I caught her on something else, which we were talking about, that she basically is a candy lover herself, and so she passes that on to her chickens by giving them multitudes of treats throughout the day. And so I explained to her that what we probably want to do is cut back on the amount and the number of treat visits. She said the other day that she was a little bit late getting out there with the special treats in the afternoon. They were all sitting on her doorstep just waiting for those treats. So obviously they may be getting these treats that are not nutritionally balanced that they need to actually lay and produce the eggs, and they're waiting on the treats versus eating their layer ration. So we talked about that. We talked about eliminating the treats right now, getting them on a good layer feed for a good 30 days and see if they can get the nutrition they need to get their little egg makers working again. And I said, still give them a treat occasionally. This is cut down to about every third day right now until we can get them laying good. But I think it was a combination of the stress of them moving to a new home, the stress of the hot, hot summer we've had here in Georgia, and then the amount of treats she was giving them versus a good nutritional and well-balanced layer feed. So she's going to try all of that. But you'll see the whole video next week. We had a really good time. And if you happen to miss it yesterday, the secret passcode for our password collection for poultry protection chicken coop contest sponsored by MyPetChicken.com, yesterday's password was bloom. Yesterday's password was bloom. Later sometime in today's show, we will share you another password. And again, remember, on Friday, September the 10th, we will take a particular caller. We'll know the day of. It may be caller 40. It may be caller 50. But that particular caller has to recite all 20 passwords that we've announced over the last 20 radio shows to win this awesome coop valued at about $400 from MyPetChicken.com. So yesterday's password, since there was no show, we also, I think, put it on Facebook, was bloom. And, of course, sometime during the day today, we will issue another password during the radio show. So we've got, so in case you missed it yesterday. But yes, thanks for asking. Had a great time. And a pretty uneventful week this week. Thank goodness the last couple of weeks have been just crazy with the egg recall and the media and the Chicks for Charity that we had last Saturday. But I'm so excited because we got a long weekend coming up this weekend. Me and Jen don't have really specifically anything planned, so hopefully we do. We're going to be making some new and more commercials for the radio show. We have that on the agenda. But other than that, hopefully just kind of playing catch up and hopefully getting some good rest and relaxation in. But the following weekend, starting the season, I'm so excited, we will be attending the Northwest Georgia Poultry Club show in Calhoun, Georgia. It's going to be a double show. We will be broadcasting live on Saturday. More than likely, it'll be a 10 a.m. Eastern time broadcast, 10 to 11, live on location, again, in Calhoun, Georgia, at the Northwest Georgia Poultry Show. Really looking forward to it. It's a smaller show, so we're looking to give them a little bit of publicity, both in the local paper and, of course, via the radio show. A few hundred birds, my understanding, but I'll get you all that information as the date comes closer. And we're really looking to starting the show season with both the American Bantam Association, the American Poultry Association, and really getting that cooking, because we're really excited. So we've got one on the 11th. Also, I don't want to give everything away, but I've got a conference call this afternoon with Meyer Hatchery up in Ohio. And, of course, they are sponsoring the youth show at the Ohio National Poultry Show, largest poultry show in the United States. We will be there broadcasting live, of course. And there's some planning in the works that hopefully it'll all be finalized today. But it looks like that they may be sponsoring my trip up there, and we may be having a visit to Meyer Hatchery on that Friday before and broadcasting live from their location. So we'll see about all of that, see if it all pans out today, if we can work out all the kinks, dot our I's, cross our T's, and then we'll make that announcement if that can get panned out and our schedules can coincide and work. to do that. So we're lots of great things. I love going on tour, meeting the folks across the country, and going to these poultry shows. So I'm really excited to be able to go to Ohio in November and go to the largest poultry show in the United States, the Ohio National. You can get all the information about that show at ohionational.org. That's ohionational.org. So looking forward to that. I've got some chickens in the news, Pat, that I want to share with everybody, and you may have one or two as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to start
off. I just
have
one little vignette, but yes, such a sweet little story I couldn't resist. But go ahead.
Perfect. Okay, so we've got our get right into our chickens in the news segment. We have one kind of maybe hopefully it's not the same one you have, a little maybe simple and sweet. This comes to us from thenorthwestern.com in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Counselor pushes for backyard chickens. Oshkosh could be the next community to decide whether it gives a cluck about backyard chickens.
There's a lot of clucking going along around the country.
Yes, In cities like Nia, Madison, and Stroughton, city councils have approved ordinances that allow residents to keep a small number of chickens in backyard coops to produce eggs. Now, Oshkosh Common Councilor Tony, I'm going to probably torture his name, but Tony Palmieri believes an Oshkosh ordinance can be patterned after those of other cities that gained acceptability by prohibiting roosters and prohibiting slaughtering of chickens in the city. Some communities also require would-be chicken owners to secure permission from at least 50% of adjacent neighbors. Now, everybody who listens to the show on a regular basis know I'm definitely not a big fan of that, because right now you don't have to get permission to have a Harley or to have kids or to have a dog or to have a cat or to have a loud radio. So there maybe this is a poultry discrimination, singling out this specific.
It's a civil liberties issue, Whisper. I mean, this is unconstitutional. And by golly, I think we just ought to raise awareness and even take it to the Supreme Court if we need to. There's no reason to get neighbors' permission for anything you want to do that's legal in your own on your own home. I mean, really.
I agree.
Really.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
He said he wants the cities to... Yeah, I agree. I'm right there with you. In fact, I need to talk to you off there about something. I don't know if... just real quick, have you heard from Margie Stancil lately?
Yes, I have. Okay. And thank you for asking. Do you want it now or do you want to wait till...
Let me finish this up here, and then we'll continue to talk about that. But Palmieri said he wants the city's Sustainability Advisory Board and Board of Health to carefully study the issue and offer plenty of opportunity for public input before any recommendation comes back to the council. So who knows? Maybe Oshkosh, Wisconsin, maybe the next town to change their ordinance to allow backyard poultry and a little bit more sustainable lifestyle in their city. So you can see all of our Chickens in the News folks at our Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer. That's facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer, and you can see all kinds of great things. We also have, in fact, yesterday we had a great Facebook fan contest, and somebody won an awesome 10-inch wire egg basket and a pack of a 10 pack of labels. Labels say hand gathered eggs. That was from eggcartons.com. And so that was the prize we were going to give away yesterday on the radio show. Since there was no radio show, because I was out doing a video shoot, we had a Facebook fan contest. So congratulations to the winner of that. Okay, and then this one I know you're going to love, Pat. I know a lot of our listeners, we've already had several comments about this. It caught my eye this morning when it came across the news wire, and I'm just going to read a little bit of it. Actually, it's not that long, so we'll probably get through it here. But the Dalai Lama now fights for the liberation of the chicken. Yes, this comes to us from Times Live, and the Dalai Lama now fights for the liberation of the chicken. And this was posted today. The Dalai Lama, who fled to India in 1959 after a failed revolt against Chinese rule in Tibet, is now fighting for the freedom of the battery chicken. The Dalai Lama slammed battery hen farming and asked consumers to switch to free-range eggs instead, or chickens kept outside of cages. Turning these defenseless animals into egg-producing machines with no consideration for their welfare whatsoever is a degradation of our own humanity. The Buddhist spiritual leader said that He said, they say you are what you eat, and I guess a spiritual leader has to think about food sometimes, and the odd battery chicken. Do you want fries with that? So there you have it, folks. Yep, the Dalai Lama is now fighting for the liberation of chicken. He is turning against the battery cages and poor conditions of chickens all across the country. And wanting him mentioning this and having this and starting this this revolution, it'll get a lot more attention, I think, to again, backyard chickens, buying local farms, smaller farms, and then maybe even try to change over some of the practices of the large commercial farms that are producing so many eggs to so many people and the conditions. I also posted, you can see this also on our Facebook page, but I also posted another one this morning that is related to this, quite frankly. And let me see if I can get it. Yep, here it is. I encourage you to go there and read this as well. The FDA's egg inspection reports. And that is from The Atlantic. The FDA's egg inspection reports, and it has a little comment here with the word yuck. The FDA has just posted the 483 reports from inspectors who examined the Iowa egg factories responsible for the recent salmonella outbreak and recalls. These, as the New York Times puts it, into nose-pinching detail. Just as I happen to have a strong stomach for these kind of things, perhaps because I've had children, birds like babies produce waste. Babies create some smelly sanitation issues, but tens of thousands of birds in one place create waste on an entirely different scale for the birds themselves, for the workers who handle them, and for people who eat their eggs. The FDA reports make interesting reading. The inspection violations at the Hillendale facility range from the seemingly trivial unsigned forms. So, and I said this way early on. If you remember, you heard it here first, way early on, when news media started talking about all this stuff and about how many reports and violations they had. I was probably one of the first ones that said, now, you know, let's wait until the report comes out, because a lot of these reports could be something possibly as trivial as the light was out in the vending machine, or, you know, something trivial like that. And so here she's pointing out that some of these may be trivial, like an unsigned form or two, but it also goes all the way to the disturbing rodent holes and the alarming leaking manure to the utterly damning, which is egg wash water testing positive for salmonella. So the egg washers, where they wash the eggs before they put them in, was contaminated with salmonella. So that was, hey, there you go. The comments on the Wright egg facility sometimes approach the poetic, and so it's just very, very good article. It's a little bit lengthy, but I encourage you to go again to our Facebook page, facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer, and take a look at this. So the FDA's egg inspection reports comes down to just being one word, yuck. And so you can this ties in right with the Dalai Lama and his report here, wanting us to get away from all of that, buying local, buying smaller, and keeping hens in our own backyard, so we know exactly where our food comes from. Pat, you said you had a Chickens in the News you'd like to share as well.
Yeah, thanks, Whisper. That's all great news. I mean, it's true that who's to say what's bad luck? I think this salmonella in the eggs and being such a massive recall is probably the best thing that could have happened to local agriculture and certainly backyard flocks. So sometimes it has to get so bad that we get such a contrast before we can start to swing back towards something that's better. But one of the things I just wanted to put a footnote in on your comment about the Dalai Lama, and that is it's interesting because, and I'm going to toot my horn just a touch here, but one of the books that I co-authored, Backyard Market Gardening, I co-authored it with Andy Lee, we've been getting orders, and we give my publisher gives special discounts to groups, and we've been getting more and more requests from churches, because what they're doing is starting to do community gardens, or at least a congregational garden in their church land. And some of them now, they've got gardens established, they're starting to think about having literally congregational flocks as well. So here's another sort of very very subtle and very under the radar movement that's going on about different religious groups that are starting to look for local foods for their congregation as well as for local to help local people, local poorer people or whoever. So I just wanted to throw that in, that they can be an organizational local foods movement as well as the farmers markets and certainly backyard market gardening with the kitchen gardens. Whisper, this one I have, it's just so sweet. It comes to us from Green Gardening, and it's written by Kaylin Hall. And it caught my eye because I think it's representative of something that's happening with the thousands and maybe tens of thousands of people all across America in their homes. And what this is, it's only a paragraph long, but it says, Green City Garden Girl, Blondie, the Backyard Chicken. And it's a little personal story. It says, I've got to admit, I was kind of annoyed when my new chickens came and I first started raising them back in March. It was only a week or so before my adult hens were killed by a dog when I brought them, and then I had to bring them into the house. And to be honest, it was difficult accepting them. They were a different breed. They seemed sketchier, and I admit, a little uglier than my previous birds. But recently, this is interesting, one of the chicks has developed quite a personality. And she is strangely docile and friendly. And this is what's happening, is that there'll be one or two chickens that just really like people and they start to soften people's hearts. Blondie is the chicken's name. She's an Americana. And there's a picture here of this article. She's sitting on a couch looking out of a bay window in the neighborhood, so in the back of a couch. But anyway, Blondie is becoming quite the cool chick. I think I love her. When I go out to the yard and get the all four back in the pen, the other three scattered wildly, but Blondie just sits there and waits for me to pick her up. She loves sitting in my arms, and she looks at me. I think she might love me, too. She's mellower than the others and will walk right up to my two-year-old and our four-legged dog, our family dog, Duke, without a care in the world. And she started laying as well, even though they were miniature eggs. I'm surprised by the bird's behavior and pleasantly happy to see it emerge. Something about her is just different, and I like what I see. And this gets back to kind of what we've been saying all along, is that there ought to be a bumper sticker, perhaps, that says, kind of, first you get chickens, then you fall in love. There's something about their docileness and their gentleness and their so givingness that I know, I admit I've fallen in love with my chickens, and I know you have too. So that's just a little bit of a backyard venue about how chickens can open hearts and kind of change lifestyles. So what do you think, Whisper?
I think that's a great idea, great story, and I completely agree. I've told people many a times that when they get interested in backyard poultry and then they come in and you educate them, or if I'm doing a webinar or a seminar or a workshop and tell them, when I get people set up with backyard chickens, one of the things I tell them is they can be very entertaining and they become great pets. And initially, if they don't have the experience, they question that. But believe it or not, and I know you believe it, when they come back or I talk to them months later, weeks later, they say, all the information was very helpful, but I have to let you know that when you told me that they make great pets and great entertainment, I doubted that. I had no clue. But that's the first thing they come back to me and share with me, is that you were mm-hmm. correct, that we've named them. They're a part of our family now. They're entertaining to watch. They're a part of our family. So absolutely, I can concur with everything in that story. And Jen is kind of responsible for naming our chickens. We've got 35, and I could name probably but about four or five. Obviously, Ruby was the lucky one that got the limo drive down to the Fox Studios on last Friday. So Ruby is famous around here. She's strutting through the run back there with, her nice clean legs. She got a bath the night before, and yeah, she's definitely king of the hill back there right now, spreading the bragging basically to all the other hens in our backyard about what she got to do. But yeah, it's I completely agree with everything in that story, and that's one of the comments that I get get a lot.
I almost think they know when they've gone out on a special event like that. When I take my Oprah Winfrey on a therapy chicken gig to the local nursing homes or at schools, honest to God, she seems to come back and just a little puffier and a little more self-importance and joyful. She's such a person of a chicken. It's just uncanny. But all this goes to show people across the country are learning that chickens are truly pets with benefits because they give back so much more than they take to keep. So here it's part of the chicken movement that's here to stay. So
absolutely.
Okay. Yeah.
We're going to take a little bit of a break, and then when we come back, it's Wednesday. It's the first Wednesday of the month, so and it is the first day of the month. I can't believe it's September already. My goodness gracious, where'd summer go? But today is another great episode of The Living Garden with Jane Jensen, and for the next 30 minutes, she's going to be teaching us and talking all about preserving and maybe even get into a little bit of canning, but basically preserving our harvest from our backyard garden. So we're going to be talking all about that right after this short break. Don't go anywhere. Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Since 1947, Randall Berkey has been providing quality products to their customers. They have everything you could ever want or need for backyard poultry. Feeders, waterers, medications, supplements, nesting boxes, and even coops. Visit them online at randallberkey.com and get 10% off your entire order when you use the coupon code WHISPER. That's randallberkey.com.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
ManaPro understands that poultry owners are as diverse as the birds they care for, which is why they offer both medicated and non-medicated starters. Whichever product you choose, you know you're getting great nutrition for your new chicks. Look for ManaPro products at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life.
When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea have been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. These durable, easy-to-clean, quality products come with a 2-year warranty and are the choice of backyard breeders through research establishments. Visit them online at www.brinsea.com. That's B-R-I-N-S-E-A. www.brinsea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. That's 1-888-667-7009. And don't miss out on Brinsea's September sale. Until the end of the month, you can save 20% or more on their full range of incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brincy, technology you can trust.
If you're looking for a quality-made chicken coop, then look no further than Horizon Structures. When you purchase from Horizon Structures, you can rest assured that your product is produced and delivered with the highest craftsmanship through traditional value, honesty, and integrity. All chicken coops are delivered fully assembled and ready to use right away. To pick out your new Horizon Structures chicken coop, visit horizonstructures.com. That's horizonstructures.com.
This looks like a job for
Super Chicken.
You get the super sauce. I'll don my super suit.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It is now time, being the first Wednesday of the month, the Living Garden with Jane Jensen. Jane, welcome back to the show.
Hi.
How are
you
doing
today? You have a fun show.
Well, thank you very much for that. Very nice comments. And, of course, the show is only good as its special guests. And so you're one of those, the first and third Wednesday of every month. It's the Living Garden with Jane Jensen. And so we thank you for being here, taking time out of your day on the first and third Wednesdays to come and teach us all about backyard gardening. And today, no exception, we're going to be talking about preserving our harvest.
Yeah. If any of you out there are like me, you're wondering now, why did I plant all this stuff and what am I going to do with it? So I thought today would be a good time to talk about that.
Very good, yeah. We'd love to hear all of your knowledge about that and what we need to be harvesting.
I've gardened for a lot of years, and I always am perplexed. What am I going to do with all these tomatoes? It's just part of the deal, I guess, because they kind of seem to start all at once. In my mind, I used to say to my family, hey, you guys, don't eat those pears. I want to can them. Well, how dumb is that? You know, I've decided that that's all backwards. Instead, I would say, you know, you buy a box of pears or a box of fruit or something, or you have it growing in your garden, and you say, all right, everybody, eat these pears so I don't have to can them. To me, that makes more sense. Because they are so much better for you fresh. Everything is. So the best thing to do with your garden produce is to eat it fresh. Now this is kind of a step down, and we're going to go down from fresh. Fresh is the best. It's at the top of the pyramid, so to speak. The next best way to preserve your food is stick it in the fridge. And as long as it will last in the fridge, below that, is to dehydrate. Yes, dehydrate. Okay, and another thing that's just about as good is to ferment or pickle your produce. Now, you can only do that with some things, and we'll get into the specifics in a few minutes, but I'm just giving you these different methods to ferment. It's good. Now, some things will store as is, like a winter squash. You know, why chop up a winter squash and dehydrate it when it will store as is? So that's the best way to store things that will store that way. The next best thing is, we talked about stick it in the fridge. That's an important method of storing some things. Down from that, I mentioned dehydrating. That is one of the best ways to preserve food because, especially if you dehydrate below 108 degrees or 105, then you're preserving all the vitamin C, all the enzymes, the living enzymes, which help you digest that food, among other good things. So dehydrating, I have just decided I like dehydrating vegetables and fruits because they're so good, and it's easier. So,
Jane,
how do you dehydrate? Do you have a dehydrator or put it out in the sun, or what's your method?
Yeah, we'll get into that in a minute. Let me just go down this ladder here.
Okay.
So there's dehydrating. The next best way, now this is just my opinion, the next best way is to freeze. Put stuff in your freezer. Freeze those peaches fresh or grapes or whatever. That's a really good way, but the problem is if the electricity goes out, I wouldn't want to put all my eggs in that basket, so to speak.
Right.
I would freeze some, and I would dehydrate some, and sometimes I bottle things, but only if I can't do it a better way. So there's freezing. So below that, in my mind, is bottling or canning. Sometimes we call it canning, but what I mean is bottling. In canning jars or bottling jars, whatever. I think that's it's all right, but it's not as good as those other ways that we mentioned. And then there is pressure canning, which I guess if you buy a can of stew, it has been pressure canned, meaning that it's been brought up to a higher temperature in order to kill the botulism germs, if there are any. That's just a precautionary thing, but it's important. And then at the bottom is processed, packaged foods that we buy already processed and packaged. This is like I said, it's just my opinion, but I don't know. I'm just learning as I go, and I am finding that if you can keep those fresh pears in the fridge as long as possible, do it. Then if they don't get eaten, then you can dehydrate some. If there's so many that you can't dehydrate them all, then you could bottle some or freeze some. So I use canning. It's down the list of ways because you have to cook it. You just have to cook it. And for me, to cook a fruit is hard for me to do because it's so good fresh. So anyway, now let's talk about each method. And then if you have questions, you know, let me know. There are quite a surprising amount of foods that can be eaten as is. I mentioned winter squash, onions, garlic. What else? Sometimes you can keep tomatoes as is, if you handle them in a special way. I have a method of preserving my carrots, beets, celeriac, parsnips, and winter radishes. Now, those are all what we call winter vegetables, and they're crispy and hard, and they require a high humidity. Let's talk about carrots for a minute. Does anybody out there grow carrots in their garden?
I tried.
Did you?
I had the worst garden of my life this year. I think it was just awful.
Dear.
But yes, I love carrots.
Oh, I do too. And you know, this would only work if you see. Here I live in Utah, and we do have cold winters where there is snow cover on the ground almost every year. Ideally, this is the way you can store carrots if you have that kind of a condition during the winter. I dig a small pit out in the dirt. It's only about 18 inches deep. It's about a shovel and a half worth deep, 12 to 18 inches deep. It's about 18 inches wide, and it's actually a trench. So the hole is as long as I need it to be. I put the carrots and those vegetables that I mentioned, carrots, parsnips, radishes, celeriac, and beets, I put them in a bag. The bags I use are the 25-pound bags for animal feed. They are woven plastic. And you probably have seen wheat or rice come in a bag like that. Animal feed comes in bags like that. Sometimes you can go to a farm store and buy the bags new. The reason I put them in those bags is, number one, they will drain water. You don't want to just use an ordinary plastic bag because it's difficult for water to drain.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the other reason is they're mouse-proof. Mice cannot chew through those. I think that's why they use them in the first place for animal feed, like grain for cattle and horses and stuff. They put it in those kind of bags. So I put as many carrots or beets in a bag like that that I can carry, maybe 10 or 15 pounds. I have a bad back, so I don't, and I have to do this by myself. I don't have the help of a man. So I am doing this by myself. I put these bags, and I fasten the top tightly with a big, long wire twisty, and I sit it down in the trench. And then I'll put several bags in a row in my trench. It depends on how many carrots I end up with or how many beets or how many celeriacs, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I get them all in the ground, and the tops of the bags might stick up a couple of inches above ground level. That's okay. Then I pile about 2 inches of dirt, and I pack it around those bags.
Mm-hmm.
That's to keep the moisture in. And then I pile 2 or 3 feet deep pile of leaves on top of that, just big pile of leaves. And I just, that's it.
Wow,
that,
really?
That will keep all winter for me here in Utah. Hopefully by the time I put the carrots in the bags, the weather has turned cold enough that it's going to be cold. And if we have rain, great. The rain will come down through and create like 100% humidity in those bags. If we get snow, great. That covers the leaves and keeps them from blowing away. That is the best way to store those vegetables. I have not tried potatoes. Potatoes are different. They need... Oh, I have an extra fridge, and I store my potatoes all during the winter in an extra fridge. So that's why I mentioned...
So Jane, this is like a trench, store things underground. I just drew a big blank because this is such an amazing thing. You use the same trench then year after year and just kind of restock it?
You could if you didn't want to have to dig one every year, but I kind of move it around a little bit. I put it in a place where it's shady in the spring and in the fall, too. The reason I do that is because the vegetables will store clear until, like, the first part of April when the weather really starts to warm up. Then you've got to get everything out of there. If you haven't used it, you've got to get it out of there and either dehydrate it or give it away or eat it up or something, because everything will start to sprout. Start to grow, you know, and everything. So I just have to gauge it. If I can see that I'm not going to be able to eat all these, I better start giving them away or dehydrating them or something. So I do that.
Uh-huh.
But I have never found a better way to store carrots. They stay crispy, and they seem to get sweeter in that kind of storage, especially when the temperatures are cold, just barely above freezing. That I've never found a better way to store carrots. I've stored them in a refrigerator over the winter. They start to sprout. They dry out. They get a bitter flavor. They're just not nearly as good. With this way, they never get bitter. They never get dried out. They don't get damaged by mice. Sometimes I might have a problem with rotting at the bottom of the sack. So what I have done is I'll grab a couple of corn stalks, old dried up ones, and lay them in the bottom of my trench just to keep the bags up off the surface of the dirt. If your trench is on a slope, that's even better so that the water will drain downward. You know, put a couple of coarse weeds or sticks or something in the bottom of that trench, just like an inch or so, just to keep the bags up off the ground, and that will eliminate the rotting problem.
Wow. Well, you know, Whisper, this is a guy's dream. This is a true justification for getting a backhoe, so that you can dig those trenches.
You don't have to have a backhoe to do it.
Having two doesn't have anything to do with it, Jane. You know, it's that male equipment excitement syndrome. So here's a good use for backhoes.
I'm kind of not very strong. I am not a physically strong person, and I have a bad back, and I can do this. I can even dig that trench a few weeks ahead. When the weather starts to get cool, I can start to dig that trench ahead and have it be all ready. Do you want to go back?
Well, now it must be, I think you gave the dimensions for it, Jane, but I didn't quite catch it. The trench that you dig, it's got to be at least, 2 feet deep and probably a foot or more wide?
It's got to be big enough to accommodate your little bags of vegetables. I'd say 12 to 18 inches deep, 12 to 18 inches wide, and then whatever length you need it to be, depending on how many bags of vegetables you have. So that's, you know, I just love storing vegetables like this because I can go out there and then, another tip, put a very tall stake. If you get lots of snow in your area, put a very tall stake at the four corners of your trench, two at one end, marking the corners, and two at the other end. That way, if you get 3 feet of snow in the middle of the night, you can go out there. You do have to shovel off the snow off of one end, and you can find your bags. You just dig them out, pull out one bag, and I take it in. It takes me 15 minutes to dig out a bag out from under the snow. And I take it down, and I take the carrots, the produce, out of the bag, and I put it in other bags, like just grocery bags, and stick it in my fridge. And then I use that over a couple of weeks' time. And then when that's gone, I go out and get another one. So I don't have to go out there often. I go out there every 2 or 3 weeks during the winter and get a bag of produce out.
Okay. There's a question in the chat room, Jane. What about now onions and garlic? Besides carrots, what are some of the other produce that you can keep in this with the bag trench system?
Well, you can't keep onions and garlic in the bag trench because they like to be dry in storage. If you have onions in a moist room, like a bathroom or a room where there's high humidity, they will sprout. They won't keep as well, or they might even rot. I don't know. They like to be stored as dry as possible and not as cold. Around 50 to 60 degrees is good for carrots. I'm sorry, for onions and garlic.
Okay.
So they don't even like to be stored in a refrigerator because it's a bit moist. There's too much moisture in a refrigerator.
Yeah, I've had them sprout in my refrigerator.
Yeah. Now, onions, if you're going to grow onions for storage, make sure you grow a variety that is a long-keeping onion. There are dozens and dozens of varieties of onions, and you have to get a variety that is a good-keeping onion. If you don't, it'll sprout, no matter how good you store it, even if you do all the right things. It's so frustrating. So I would suggest for people who want to grow onions for storage, first of all, use seeds, not sets. Sets they just don't really work well for me, and you're better off to use seeds and get a seed that will do well in your area, in your latitude. People up north need to get Walla Walla Sweet. No, wait a minute. Those are good, but they're not a good keeping onion. I just realized
they're awfully
that.
Good.
They're good, though, but you have to use them right up. There are many. I can't really think of variety names right now, but onions are they are day length sensitive. So people up north have longer days. So people up north from north of central Utah, I would say, and just imagine a line going across a map of our country. The people who live north of central Utah, I think, should try an onion called a long day onion. They are varieties that will do well in our long days. We have long days in the summer. Think about Alaska. They have really long days in the summer. But people in the south, the Georgia and the area where you are, Whisperer, you would want short day varieties, the Vidalia onions. Oh, but yet those are not long keepers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think. So look in the description for long keeping onions, and it will say, or it should say, if it doesn't, find another source, because they need to tell people that, whether it's a long keeping onion or whether it's not.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have onions that are a long keeping onion, you have to cure them. I don't remember if we talked about curing.
No, we haven't.
We haven't. Okay. Onions have to be cured, and garlic too. And all that means is, in fact, I harvested my onions yesterday. We got a wheelbarrow full. And
nice.
I just put them in boxes no more than 2 deep. So you can put a layer in the bottom of a box, like a good banana box or some other, an orange crate type box or some kind of sturdy cardboard box. And then I put another layer on top so they were 2 deep. And no more.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just stacked the boxes on top of each other, kitty corner, you know, alternating. So I've got this big tall stack, a 5 or 6 stack of boxes out there. The idea is that the onion needs to have lots of air circulation around it.
Mm-hmm.
And with garlic, you would want to put them only 1 deep in a box.
Okay.
Because they're even more prone to rotting if they are not allowed to dry very thoroughly in the box. So they need to dry.
Now this is just to get them to dry, right, Jane? This isn't the storage, but this is just
this
to cure them?
This is to get them ready to store. They have
and
to
could you hang them up in the braids like you see in the stores?
Yeah, you could. In fact, that was probably something they did way back when to cure onions. You hang them up somewhere, and each bulb is exposed to plenty of air. They braid the tops, but the tops aren't the part you're going to be eating anyway. And garlic is an amazing plant. It has this big, huge root on it. And when they
mm-hmm.
braid those braids of garlic, the root is sticking out, so it can be out there where it will dry very nicely. So you have to let the onions and garlic dry for 2 or 3 weeks in
mm-hmm.
a warm, airy place, like a garage, a barn, an outbuilding. I put them on my front porch some years because it's dry, but it's not in direct sunlight. I don't believe you should leave onions out in the field to cure. I have seen them get sun scalded. We have very hot sun sometimes around here, and probably in lots of areas have that. And sometimes the onion will get a white patch. And my phone is beeping at me. I got to go switch phones. Anyway, just keep your onions in a very dry place, but not in direct sunlight.
Okay. Well, this might be a good time for a break, Whisper. Are you ready to do a sponsors?
I'm still here. Are you there?
Yep, you already switched.
Yep, I switched, so we're okay.
That was quick.
Okay. Thank
you. How'd you do that so fast, Jane?
Well, I had
amazing.
The phone sitting right here.
Okay, very good.
Do you want to take a break?
That's okay. We really have about 5 minutes left with the subject. So, Jane, if you'll, in maybe the next 5 minutes, kind of finish up, or maybe
yeah,
you
can
cover
going.
another topic, but in about 5 minutes, we've got to wrap it up and get to our next segment.
Okay. Well,
Jane, there's still one question that's kind of on the table here, and just to regress just a minute, but I think it's important enough to ask. On your trench method for the carrots, what other kinds of produce can you put in there besides carrots?
Carrots, beets.
Beets, okay.
Rutabagas and turnips would be wonderful stored that way.
Rutabagas, all right.
Rutabagas, turnips. Winter radishes, which are just radishes that you plant along around the 1st of August or sometime, and they make a nice size before winter, they'll store. You just twist the tops off and put them in the bags. Now, yeah, you do have to top these vegetables. The leafy part will spoil in storage. You know, you might as well get it off. You don't wash them. You just rub the worst of the dirt off, the big hunks of dirt, and just put them in the bags.
So take the tops off and just don't clean them, but sort of
no, don't
knock
wash
the chunks off.
Yeah.
Okay.
was I just
I'm taking notes here, Jane. I'm taking copious notes.
All right.
I've got 4 pages so far. So.
Oh. Fantastic. So we have carrots, beets, radishes, parsnips are wonderful stored this way.
Parsnips.
Celeriac. I don't know. Check that one out. That's a fun thing to grow. It's a vegetable that it looks like a big round white thing. Oh, it's amazing. But it,
how do you spell celeriac?
C-E-L, let me see, A-R, wait, celeriac, I don't know how to spell it.
Okay, I-A-C, we'll figure it out.
That's how it ends. C-E-L-E-R-I-A-C, that's how you spell it.
I-A-C, excellent.
Did I mention parsnips? Let's see.
Yep, we got parsnips.
Okay.
We've got, for this trench method of storing through the winter, which anyone can pretty well do if you've got any kind of land at all, but we've got the carrots, beets, rutabaga, turnips, celeriac, and I'm not sure, I don't think I've ever had that.
Celeriac. Celery. It tastes like celery.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It's
radishes.
Wonderful winter radishes.
And how about squash? Will they keep winter squash or acorn squash?
No, squash is another one that needs to be dry. It needs to be cured the same way onions are cured.
Okay.
You cut them, you put them in a warm place where they can dry and the shells harden. Leave a stem on them about 2 inches long, and after they're cured, then you can just put them in a cardboard box and put them in a basement. That's how I keep my winter squash. I just want to take a minute and talk about dehydrating. Dehydrating, I just can't speak enough good about dehydrating. I don't have a lot of freezer space, and so I am learning to dehydrate green beans, carrots. Now, this is carrots that have already gone through a winter of storage. Sometimes I'll have a whole bunch in the spring that I didn't eat them fast enough, you know, so I've got 3 whole bagfuls of carrots, and it's the end of March, and the weather's going to get warm. So I get them out, and I scrub them up, and I dehydrate them. I grate them and dehydrate them, or you can slice them or dice them.
Okay.
You could also make juice out of them and freeze the juice.
Oh, really? Will the juice keep? Or I thought juice something,
it gets a little bit of a funny, lumpy texture. So it's not real good, but it still could be done, and it is palatable. Actually, it's quite delicious. I love carrot juice. I found that corn, you could store corn, I just cut it off the cobs without blanching the cobs, and I freeze it raw. Now, they've always told us you have to blanch corn. It is not true.
I'm really glad to hear that.
Yeah, because I think that's a lot of work, and why should I do it? I have experimented with that. I froze 2 packages of corn raw 1 year. I took one out 6 months after. It was delicious. I took the next one out 9 months after. It was delicious. You just use it, you know, like you would. Anyway, so corn does not have to be blanched. I don't know about...
There's a couple questions. Jane, there's just a couple questions, if I may, in the chat room. We've only got about... a minute and a half left. And so if I can pop these at you for just a quick response. Spongy wants to know, do you wrap things in paper before storing in the basement, like your squash?
I never have because I just haven't found that it was necessary. I would suggest that you rub off all the dirt off of your squash. If you want to, you can wash them in a mild Clorox solution. Just to kind of sterilize the outside and then dry them immediately.
Okay. That's
you could
a good
do that.
The next question is, and we've got 1 minute left, what's a good resource for dehydration instructions and recipes? Do you have a favorite reference that you look at?
Well, I'll tell you, I have a favorite dehydrator, and I guess I shouldn't push a product, but I love the Excalibur brand dehydrator, and they have a lot of recipes in their instruction book. But there's also, talk to people who have done it, maybe neighbors or family members, grandmothers, people who have dehydrated. The key to dehydrating is to get it when you put something on your dehydrator, it needs to dry quickly the first few hours, the first couple of hours. For instance, dried apricots. Let's talk about dried apricots.
Mm-hmm.
You don't soak them or dip them in anything. I just don't do that. I just open that apricot up and stick it on the dryer tray. In fact, I wash them before I open them because I figure you don't want a bunch of water sitting on the inside of that apricot. That just slows it all down. Let's get it to dry as quickly as possible. There's a skin that forms on that apricot.
Do you take the pits out, I assume, and do you blanch them and take the skins off then?
No, not the skins. Just take the
just
pits
the pit.
Yeah. And just put them up and dry them. And, you know, the first 2 hours that apricot spends on your dryer is most important. So I don't fill my dryer completely full that first 2 hours. I'll just do 3 or 4 trays, let them get a good head start, and then I'll go and do 3 or 4 more trays.
Okay, excellent. Well, Jane, that's all the time we've got here.
Yeah.
And I can honestly say now I've got 5.5 pages of notes here from today's show.
Well,
so thank you so much for coming on.
I would encourage everyone, if they feel like it, to get into the livinggardenseries.com because we go into it in so much more detail.
Excellent. Okay. Well, we've been talking with Jane Jensen from Utah, and Jane is the creator of the Living Gardens videos, like she said, livinggardens.com. And Jane, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate your expertise and advice. I'm sure it's I'm going to be start thinking about I might have to get a backhoe again, but to get a trench. I love to use backhoes. I turn into a mad mole in a way, but. Anyway, thank you, Jane, so much. It's been wonderful and informative. Whisper, do you have any final questions for Jane?
No, I do not. We're going to go to commercial break, and we come back. We have a couple of very special guests coming on. You're not going to want to miss it. A special announcement about a very, very special event. So we're going to go to a short commercial break, and we come back. You don't want to go anywhere. We've got some special guests coming on. Stay right there.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com. Since 1947, Randall Berkey has been providing quality products to their customers. They have everything you could ever want or need for backyard poultry. Feeders, waterers, medications, supplements, nesting boxes, and even coops. Visit them online at randallberkey.com and get 10% off your entire order when you use the coupon code WHISPER. That's randallberkey.com.
ManaPro is committed to providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. No matter the animal, no matter the product, you can be certain that ManaPro cares as much about the well-being of your flock as you do. So try one of the many poultry products offered at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us. I want to remind you as well, a special reminder, you do not want to miss out on Brinsea's September sale. It's very rare that they do have a sale on their quality products, but you don't want to miss out for the month of September, actually until the end of the month. You can save 20% or more on their full range of incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. You want to visit them online at Brinsea.com. That's Brinsea.com. So a wonderful special September sale at Brinsea.com. 20% or more on their full range of incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brinsea. Technology you can trust. All righty, it is now time that we've been waiting on. Very, very special segment of the radio show. And let me get over here to the switchboard. First and foremost, we're going to welcome Beecher Grogan to tell us. We're going to welcome her. She's calling from Massachusetts, I believe. And she's going to be come on telling us about this awesome event that's going to actually happen on Sunday, September the 12th. I have a snippet here for it. I'll read you. We've got Sunday, September 12th, rain or shine from noon to 3 p.m. The location is Woodsome Farm at 240 Lions Mouth Road in Amesbury, Mass. On Sunday, September 12th from noon to 3 at Woodsome Farm in Amesbury, Mass. Please come and join and experience the joy and wonder of Lucy's Love Bus Fly Away Festival. 1,000 monarch butterflies will be released as part of a fundraising effort that will provide direct support and comfort to children with cancer. The festival features live music with the number one R&B group on YouTube, Amir, Arata, The Brew, and, of course, Nathan Osman will all be there performing and entertaining. This day is geared towards families, crafts for children, face painting, pony rides, a butterfly garden workshop by Beach Plum Farms. Pizza will be there by a flatbread company, sports activities, and, of course, the release of thousands of monarch butterflies to honor those impacted by cancer. The Flyaway Festival is a special project of Lucy's Teen Leaders, a group of 22 local youth who have joined together to help turn their friend Lucy's dream into a reality. Lucy lost her battle to cancer 4 years ago. The event will take place rain or shine. Please join us for this unique community event and help support local kids in their commitment to deliver comfort to children with cancer. And this is what I mentioned in the chat room a little bit earlier. I asked everybody in the chat room and everybody who's listening live that's not in the chat room that didn't see the post, if you could set aside $15 for today's radio show to actually purchase a butterfly for release at the event. We would like for you to visit their website, luciesloveBus.org. That's www.luciesloveBus.org. They want to give a special thanks to the Institution for Savings in Newburyport, Mass. For all of their support as well. And nonetheless, on the phone, we do have Beecher Grogan coming on. Lost her daughter Lucy, passed away 4 years ago battling this horrible, the big C, a lot of people call it cancer, and we want to welcome her to the show right now. Beecher, welcome so much to the show. So glad to have you.
Hi, thank you. I'm honored to be here. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Tell us, start from the beginning. You have all of our ears listening. Mainly, you can tell us about how this organization, LucysLoveBus.org, got started. I think it's a wonderful story. And then kind of we can segue into the wonderful event that's coming up on September the 12th.
All right, wonderful. First, I want to thank you for doing all the hard work and getting all the details out there. I get to talk about the fun stuff, which is my daughter Lucy and the impact she's had on her family and friends. So Lucy was 8 when she got sick. She had a very rare form of leukemia. She was sick for about a year and a half, went through treatment, and was in remission for another year and a half. And then the cancer relapsed. And when that happened, we really had a very slim chance of having her survive because she had to have a bone marrow transplant. So that's a very dangerous, risky procedure and is an extremely painful thing to go through. So during that time, Lucy did a lot of alternative, people call them alternative or complementary. The word now is integrative therapies, such as acupuncture, and Reiki, massage. We did, you know, everything we could do to help her balance the traditional chemo and radiation. So the way we were able to afford that, I actually had to leave my job to stay with Lucy because she would be in the hospital, you know, one time it was 6 months inpatient. So there was really no way I could work. And our community, the little town of Amesbury, Mass., which has about 16,000 residents, pulled together and raised enough money through our 4 years of struggle to allow us to give Lucy anything she needed, including a dozen chickens, I should add. So,
aww.
I'm serious. We have to talk more about chickens later. But Lucy knew toward the end of her life, we were having a conversation. She died very unexpectedly, July 21st of 2006. And about 2 weeks before that, we were sitting in the hospital bed talking, and she said, you know, I know that the reason I could afford all these things was because my community loves me so much. And she said, I feel sad that other children don't have the ability to get the comfort that I've had from Reiki and acupuncture and massage and therapeutic horseback riding. And she said, you know, when I'm done with this, that's what I want to do. And I just remember that conversation vividly and feel like she was giving me a message, because I do think Lucy knew she wasn't going to beat her cancer. So after she died, we had actually started a nonprofit before she died, and she actually helped to name it. So that's where Lucy's Love Bus comes from. We had started it originally as a nonprofit to help do a bone marrow drive for one of Lucy's best friends, who unfortunately lost her battle because we couldn't find a bone marrow donor for her. But that's how it all started. And so when Lucy made that vision clear to me and then died, you know, I took about 3 years to just hunker down and recover and try to heal and take care of my remaining two children. But on the third anniversary of her death, I literally felt Lucy kick me in the butt and say, all right, this is great. You've had 3 years, but now my friends are still suffering, and now you need to get going. And I don't know how else to explain it. I had a real kick from her in the butt. So
good for her.
Oh, yeah, it was a powerful kick. I got up that day and went to work and just overcame my own fears about what do I do, you know, if I had to work full time and how do I run this thing and what if it gets so big and what would I do and blah, blah, blah. I got over all that and just really went for it. So in the past year, you have a question?
Well, yes, I was just going to ask, how did she communicate that? Because, and I'm going to put my cards right on the table. I totally believe there's communication beyond this physical life. So I'm sort of metaphysical in that sense. But how did you get the inspiration or the communications from Lucy to take action?
I mean, it was pretty profoundly powerful. I've had a few experiences with her where I literally can hear her. This wasn't one of those. This was, you know, on a day-to-day level, if I say out loud, Lucy, where are you? I can literally hear her say, Mom, I'm right here. I'm right here. So that's been a huge blessing, and I share that with other people who lost kids, and they tell me when they try it, they have the same experience. But if you're really listening, they are right there. But this was more like it was the anniversary of her death. It was 3 years into it, which is always a pretty difficult day. And I just had this overpowering urge to empty out every closet, every cluttered area in my house, and I gave away 3 truckloads of stuff to a friend with an antique shop and just cleaned through the house, sort of like nesting when a woman is pregnant. I don't know how else to describe it, but it was very Lucy-driven, and the next day I said, all right, this is it. She wants me to go. I got to go, and I did it. I don't know how else to explain it. I just could feel the push. And her getting impatient and pissed off at me that I had to hurry up and help her friends before they died, you know?
So I was very inspired. I mean, you were inspired from that beyond or wherever. Well, good for both of you. There you go.
Yeah,
and now it's affecting people whose lives and faces you'll never know or see, but it's affecting us all. So that's the power of the I guess, giving and the love bust.
Yeah, the Love Bus is all about love. We're all volunteers. We have no paid people. All the money goes straight to kids with cancer, which, you know, we're hoping to maintain that model. It's a little tricky, but we are trying to, as we grow, find more and more teen volunteers who are the kids who organize the whole festival. We have 22 teen leaders, as you mentioned. And a lot of the work has been done by these kids. Lots of the fundraising has been done by them. And they were friends of Lucy, so they are inspired to help. And recently we had a child out in Barry, Mass., who's being helped by the Love Bus. We gave her a $1,000 grant for integrative therapies. And her community came forward and said, hey, we want to help. You're helping her. We want to help you. So the little girl's field hockey team of 35 kids has got together and started raising money in honor of that child and giving it to the Love Bus to help other children. So it's an incredible.
Did we lose her, Pat? Do you hear me?
Yes, Whisper, I hear you. I think we did lose her because it just went dead. And I so regret it, but you're going to lose me here very shortly, too. I've got this lunch with the local foods power lunch with the mayor and Chris Carpenter. So I'm going to have to sign off. And may I just say before I get lost, may the flock be with you evermore. God bless everybody. Looking forward to talking with you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
All righty, Pat. Thank you very much for joining us. And I'm going to ask Beecher, if she will call back, and we'll get her back live on the air, because we do have another very special caller that would like to talk with her, who's actually going to be performing at this big event. To review, it's going to be Sunday, September the 12th, rain or shine, from noon to 3 p.m. at the Woodsome Farm at 240 Lions Mouth Road in Amesbury, Mass. The zip is 01913. And it's going to be awesome. They're going to have the Amir, the number one R&B group on YouTube performing, Arada, The Brew, Nathan Osmond's going to be there entertaining. It's geared towards families with crafts, face painting, pony rides, butterfly garden workshop by Beach Plum Farms, pizza by Flatbread Company, sports activities, and, of course, the release of thousands of monarch butterflies to honor those that have been impacted by cancer. It looks like that Beecher has called back in. Beecher, sorry about that. We lost you there for a minute.
I think that was Lucy, probably.
I'm going to go ahead and bring on actually another wonderful guest we have today, and I believe Leon, one of the members of Amir, which is the number one rhythm and blues group on YouTube with millions and millions of followers and hits. Leon, are you there?
I'm here. Hey, Andy, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for joining us. What an honor and pleasure. And you're going to be performing live, your group, Amir, at this event on Sunday, September 12th. So wish I could be there and join you guys. Maybe we can set up some type of a webcam where people can watch live from anywhere in the country. Maybe we can contact somebody that has that capability. But tell us a little bit about what you have planned for that day, and say hello to Beecher.
Hey, Beecher, how you doing?
Hey, Leon, this is a nice surprise. How are you?
I'm well. Well, we plan on doing some cover songs and some original songs, and really just participating in the event. You know, we do a lot of charity work, and when we met Beecher at an event a couple months ago for John Kerry, she really shared Lucy's story with us. It was, you know, heartwarming and touching, and, you know, we definitely knew at that point it was something that we wanted to help out with and to participate in. So we're looking forward to it. You know, we have the calendar marked and looking forward to coming out to Amesbury. We don't get out that way too often, so we're looking forward to coming out there and meeting the other musicians and just, you know, participating in a great day.
I want to take this opportunity to let all of our listeners know that, since it is related, today's secret password is butterfly. Today's secret password for our chicken coop contest is butterfly, so you can always remember this program and, of course, to make sure you go to Lucy's Love Bus, lucyslovebus.org, and you too can purchase a butterfly for $15 that will be released that day. I encourage you, if you know a child or a parent or a loved one, I don't think anybody in the world has not been touched by the big C cancer, either in your immediate family or neighbor or extended family. And so I want to encourage you as well right now. I have done it. Lots of people in our chat room claiming they have done it here. Www.lucyslovebus.org. You can pay via PayPal. It's very easy. It doesn't take 5 minutes to do this. $15. Get buy one for every loved one that you currently have with us that is cancer-free, has fought this battle and won, and those that you have lost over the years to this horrible and devastating disease. I know my dad is a cancer survivor as well, and so I have purchased one basically in for his honor. So,
Andy, I'd also,
thank you.
I also like to mention that, sorry to interrupt you, that Amir also, each one of us has purchased a butterfly or is going to purchase a butterfly, and we challenge, you know, everyone listening to also, you know, just reach out, you know, and like you said, just help, you know, help. There's never no such thing as too much help.
Right.
Thank you,
Ian. I agree. And nobody knows. I mean, this. And bottom line, can happen to anybody. This is not a, oh, it won't happen to me. You know, I just saw today on the news where he had throat cancer. He was in Wall Street. I can't think of his name off the top of my head right now. I mean, it's just that he's bringing light to how it can affect anybody and everybody. I mean, you could start having symptoms tomorrow. It could be you tomorrow. It could be your mom, your dad, mm-hmm. your child, anything. It can happen
exactly.
to any one of us. Any one of us at any time. So I know a lot of times in our busy lives we get focused on things, and I'm the first to admit, I was telling someone yesterday, you know, until it may happen to you, it may not be a priority. Until it happens to you or a loved one, you may not be taking the walks. You may not be donating. And then when it happens to you, you know, all of a sudden, you know, it has that much more, that more meaning. So you know, we try to let everybody know that, you know, you probably know somewhere, someone across the country that's been affected by this. So, and a lot of times the emphasis is not on children. And so this project, my understanding, feature is that all the money raised does go to help children. And in many ways that some of the other programs may or may not, and it also uses maybe some alternative medication and also providing some comfort treatments as well, not just treating the cancer, but comfort to make the children feel better while they're going through the treatments. Is that correct?
That's exactly right, and that was Lucy's mission. You know, Lucy looked around her and said, you know, most of the families that we knew who lost a child got very involved in finding a cure, which is obviously cure is critical, and very, very important. But she looked at that and she said, you know, what about the kids who are suffering right now? Putting $2 billion into a cure is wonderful and important, but it's not going to help the children who are suffering today. And that was her mission, was to offer comfort to those kids. And she knew for her what helped her was doing these very gentle therapies that helped keep her soul and her mind and her body connected. Can I read you a quick quote from Lucy?
You sure may.
To me, this sums up everything about this child that was so amazing. She was such a little old soul, and she wrote a letter to her primary oncologist days, it was within days of her death, like 2 or 3 days, and she wrote this beautiful letter. I just want to read you part of it. She wrote, "When you look at the sick children, follow them to the place they can speak to you in. Notice that their bodies are two things, love and illness, and help them remember the love and not the sickness. The healing is in knowing who you were, not what you might be." And I think what Lucy was trying to get across to him was that these sick kids, people are running around them going, "You're going to be fine. You have to be positive. You're going to be fine." And don't let them acknowledge the absolute terror of having a life-threatening illness. And don't help them stay connected to the part of them that's still a vital, healthy child. And I think for Lucy, doing the massage, the therapy, the relaxation, meditation, all those pieces helped her stay focused and centered and willing to keep fighting. For 4 years, that is a long time to fight. And when she was done, she was done. But I think the integrative therapies that we used were a huge piece in helping her stay reasonably happy throughout the experience.
We're running out of town, about 2 minutes left, but your story earlier, you, I guess, firsthand also saw the importance. And I'll raise my hand first to say that I guess I'm guilty, because as far as I know, I am an organ donor on my driver's license, but I'll be the first to admit that I'm not on any list as far as being a bone marrow donor. Is there a list, or is it something we just wait to see in the news and say?
No.
Go ahead.
Yeah, National Bone Marrow Donor Registry. That's what you would Google. National Bone Marrow Donor Registry. You can go on there and become a donor. Often hospitals will let you become a donor if you've donated platelets or red blood cells. You can hold events to become a donor. It's very, very simple. The test process is very simple. Being an actual donor is, you know, 2 weeks of a sore butt, basically, but worth it when you think about the life you can save.
Well, thank you so much. We've got about 90 seconds left. Leon with Amir, the number one R&B group on YouTube, and, of course, Beecher Grogan, thank you for coming on. We're going to be Facebooking this, Twitter, and, of course, continuing to try to get raise money and have people buy the butterflies for this special event on September the 12th. So we'll have this on our Facebook, Twitter, and on our webpage, chickenwhisperer.com as well. So, Ms. Grogan, thank you very much for joining us. And thank you, Leon, taking time out of your busy event schedule with Amir.
Oh, my pleasure.
And y'all all have an absolutely wonderful week. And, of course, everybody listening, we hope you'll tune in tomorrow, 12 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here. It's Poultry Today with Dr. McRae tomorrow, and she's going to be teaching us all about preparing for winter, preparing our flocks for winter. That'll be tomorrow. So thank you so much for tuning in. And remember, today's secret password is butterfly, and you can get yours to support Lucy's Love Bus at lucyslovebus.org. We'll see you tomorrow, folks.
Thank you.
Ha ha ha.